This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, December 1st, 2009. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poetry of the here and now. James Schuyler's friends were some of the most famous people in American poetry and art. Frank O'Hara, Kenneth Koch, Willem and Elaine de Kooning, Jane Freilicher. His good friend and occasional collaborator John Ashbery has said that Schuyler is simply the best we have. So why isn't he better known, more read? Well, on the November Poetry Magazine podcast, Christian Wyman, the editor of the magazine, addressed this with Don Scher, the senior editor. I'm going to play a little clip from that.
Schuyler is a poet that he's not served well at all by anthologies, and he hasn't even been anthologized until recently, although I think he may be one of the major poets of the last century.
Yeah.
You have to read a lot of him before you begin to think, gosh, how does he do that over and over? You can come across some Schuyler poems and you think, man, that's horrible. I could write that on my way to grocery store or
nobody
something.
Writes, and yet nobody yeah. writes like him.
Exactly.
So I took Christian Wyman to heart and got hold of Schuyler's collected poems, and I'm slowly working my way through it. And he may be best read in bulk, but we wanted to do something with Schuyler for this podcast, which does not specialize in bulk presentation of poetry. Joining me to listen to a few short Schuyler poems is Eric Ziegenhagen. Eric Ziegenhagen is a stage director, playwright, songwriter, and performer based in Chicago. And he wrote an article on Schuyler that recently went up on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Thanks for coming by, Eric.
Hi, Curtis. Thanks.
So do you agree with Christian Wyman? You have to read a lot of him to know if he's any good?
Well, I first read Schuyler's poetry about a decade ago, and I found the collected poems. And so I found his whole body of work as a whole.
And you chugged all the way through the collected poems?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I think each of the books is a little bit like reading somebody's journal or reading somebody's diary.
Yeah.
A number of the poems have specific dates in them, and they seem sequential. They seem to capture literally this month is over, this season is over. This afternoon is over. This day is over.
Yeah. So if you skip around and you just sample him from here and there, you get it. It's like sampling from a diary. You don't get a sense of the whole poet or the whole person.
Yeah. When I started thinking more about him before writing this article, it made me wonder if poets will be able to continue writing in a certain kind of diary style when everybody, to a certain extent, writes like that now.
Mm.
And so to have somebody's daily reflections captured and shared is, to a certain extent, no longer special in and of itself. But as they were saying in that recording a minute ago, whatever makes his poems work is something that I don't think can be imitated or replicated by anybody else.
Now, Schuyler didn't record any of his poems, I think, until rather late in life, as far as I know. And there's a wonderful trove of recordings at the fabulous audio poetry website, Penn Sound. Let's listen to a poem called Korean Mums that was recorded at the 92nd Street Y in New York City in 1989, just 2 years before Schuyler died. Just before we hear it, Korean mums are a type of chrysanthemum that can flower late into the fall. And there are a couple other species he mentions and that we won't go into. Anything you want to add about this poem before? I know you never heard Schuyler read a poem before. It's going to be a surprise to you. But is there anything you want to add about the poem itself before we hear it?
I'll just wait and listen to it.
Okay, let's listen to the poem.
Korean mums. Korean mums beside me in this garden are huge and daisy-like. Why not? Are not oxeye daisies a chrysanthemum? Shrubby and thick-stalked, the leaves pointing up the stems from which the flowers burst in sunbursts. I love this garden in all its moods, even under its winter coat of salt hay, or now in October, more than half gone over. Here a rose, there a clump of aconite. This morning one of the dogs killed a barn owl. Bob saw it happen, tried to intervene. The Airedale snapped its neck and left it lying. Now the bird lies buried by an apple tree. Last evening from the table we saw the owl, huge in the dusk, circling the field on owl's silent wings. The first one ever seen here. Now it's gone, a dream you just remember. The dogs are barking. In the studio, music plays, and Bob and Dara paint. I sit scribbling in a little notebook at a garden table, too hot in a heavy shirt, in the mid-October sun into which the Korean moms all face. There's a dull book with me, an apple core, cigarettes, an ashtray. Behind me, the rue I gave Bob flourishes. Light on leaves, so much to see, and all I really see is that owl, its bulk troubling the twilight. I'll soon forget it. What is there I have not forgot, or one day will forget? This garden, the breeze and stillness, even the words Korean moms.
So the poem begins with talking about these Korean mums in a garden, and then all of a sudden he mentions his friend Bob. All of a sudden Bob mm-hmm. appears in the poem.
This morning one of the dogs killed a barn owl. Bob saw it happen, tried to intervene.
This is a very typical, I don't want to say a conceit, but a habit within his own poetry and with his friends within the so-called New York school of throwing in names of people around them without explaining who they are, right?
Yeah. I think the first part of the poem begins with something that he is only seeing himself.
Korean mums beside me in this garden are huge and daisy-like.
But it goes from that into the story. So suddenly you're going from an individual point of view to something that a group of people experienced over a weekend.
Last evening from the table we saw the owl, huge in the dusk, circling the field on owl's silent wings. The first one ever seen here.
There's this progression from observing a garden to whose garden it is and whose house is this.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, whose lives and whose actions led up to this view that's happening right now.
But the tension in the poem seems to be, for me, his effort to be in the here and now, right there, observing this beautiful garden, these Korean moms in front of him, yet he's drawn out of it.
Light on leaves, so much to see. And all I really see is that owl, its bulk troubling the twilight.
To a certain extent, I feel like he feels like there's no honest way to describe the landscape without bringing in what's on his mind and what's clouding the landscape for him.
Right.
And it's this other story that's coming in there and this other image, literally.
I'll soon forget it. What is there I have not forgot, or one day will forget? This garden, the breeze and stillness, even the words Korean moms.
The tone of it is rather straightforward and matter-of-fact and maybe even a bit bemused that, yes, indeed, even though he's trying very hard to see what's in front of his face right now, it's all going to wash away with time.
And he's finished a poem that afternoon. That's what I got out of that tone, is to a certain extent there's some satisfaction at having written this afternoon. And so if the flip side of that is mortality, that's okay.
Yeah. It's as if he could, at the end of every one of his poems, he could write a little coda and say, but I got a poem out of it anyway.
Yeah.
So there's one thing you bring up in your piece that was intriguing. You point out that he seems to be writing a poem while what he's describing in that poem is actually happening to the poet.
Yeah.
You'd explain that a little bit. Draw that up.
I don't even want to call it a device because it feels... it works so well, I don't think of it as a device until I've been affected by the poem and I go back and look at it and say, how did he do that? But there's some of his poems where literally an afternoon passes in the course of writing a poem, but that somehow he's capturing something in that day, but then the act of capturing that also is capturing who he is on that day.
Yeah, the writing of the poem is not outside of the poem itself. It's part of the poem. Mm-hmm. It's writing a poem is part of life, and he's describing his life on that particular day.
And his life and his mind and his body and his memory and his present sensations are all in there. And I think somehow it's that balance combined with what's in front of him and what's in him.
Mm.
And it's the balance of all of those things that make his poems extraordinary.
Let's listen to one more James Schuyler poem. This one also starts as a flower poem and then goes somewhere else. It's called The Bluet. And blue seems to be Schuyler's favorite color. Have you noticed that in his, how many times he mentions blue? It comes up all over his collected
poem.
Anyhow, this poem was recorded at the San Francisco Art Institute in 1989. Here's James Schuyler reading.
The Bluet. And is it stamina that unseasonably freaks forth a bluet, a Quaker lady by the lake, so small a drop of sky that splashed and held, four-petaled, creamy in its throat. The woods around were brown, the air crisp as a car's table water biscuit, and smelt of cider. There were frost apples on the trees in the field below the house. The pond was still, then broke into a ripple. The hills, the leaves that have not yet fallen, are deep and oriental rug colors. Brown leaves in the woods set off gray trunks of trees. But that bluet was the focus of it all. Last spring, next spring, what does it matter? Unexpected as a tear when someone reads a poem you wrote for him. It's this line here. That bluet breaks me up. Tiny spring flower, late, late in dour October.
You can read Eric Ziegenhagen's article on James Schuyler on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can also find a generous sampling of Schuyler's poems. His collected poems are published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, where you can also write a review of it. Or you can let us know directly what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. We always love to hear from listeners. The music used in this program comes from La Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.